नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय टुडे विल बी रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर 59 द किलिंग ऑफ द डीमन नरका टेक्स्ट नंबर 1 सो आई जस्ट रीड द चैप्टर समरी एज वेल दिस चैप्टर टेल्स अस हाउ लॉर्ड कृष्णा किल्ड नरकासुर द सन ऑफ द अर्थ गॉडेस and married the thousands of maidens the demon had kidnapped. It also describes how the Lord stole the Parijata tree from heaven and how he behaved like an ordinary householder in each of the palaces, his palaces. After Narakasura stole Lord Varuna's umbrella, Mother Aditi's earrings, and the playground of the demigods known as Mani Parvat, Indra went to Dwarka and described the demon's transgressions to Lord Krishna. Together with Queen Satyabhama, the Lord mounted his chariot Garuda, and travelled to the capital of Narakasura's kingdom. On a field outside the city, he decapitated the demon Mura with his disc. Then he fought Mura's 7 sons and sent them all to the board of death. After which Narakasura himself entered the battlefield on the back of an elephant. Naraka threw his Shakti glance at Sri Krishna, but the weapon proved ineffective, and the Lord cut the demon's entire army to pieces. Finally, with sharp-edged disc, Krishna cut off Narakasura's head. The earth goddess Prithvi then approached Lord Krishna and gave him the various items Narakasura had stolen. She offered prayers to the Lord and presented Naraka's frightened son at Lord Krishna's lotus feet. After pacifying the demon's son, Krishna entered Narakasura's palace, where he found 16,100 young women. As soon as they caught sight of the Lord, they all decided to accept him as their husband. The Lord sent them to Dwarka along with a great quantity of treasure and then went with Queen Satyabhama to the abode of Indra. There he returned Aditi's earrings and Indra and his wife Sachi Devi worshipped him. On Satyabhama's request, Lord Krishna uprooted the heavenly Parijata tree and put it on the back of Garuda. After defeating Indra and the other demigods who opposed his taking of the tree, Krishna returned with Queen Satyabhama to Dwarka, where he planted it in a garden adjacent to Satyabhama's palace. Indra had originally come to Lord Krishna offering obeisances and begging him to kill Narakasura, but afterwards, when his business had been accomplished, he quarrelled with the Lord. The demigods are prone to anger because they become intoxicated with pride in their opulences. The infallible Supreme Lord manifested himself in 16,100 separate forms and married each of the 16,100 brides in a different temple. He took up the required activities of household life, just as an ordinary person, accepting various kinds of service from each of his many wives. Shri Rajo Vacha, Yathahato Bhagavata, Bhaumo Yena Chattaha Sriyaha, Niruddha Etad Achakshva, Vikramam Sharinga Dhanvanaha Yathahato Bhagavata Mamo Yena Chata Sriyaha Niruddha Etad Achakshva Vikramam Sharinga Dhanvanaha Shri Rajo Vacha Yathahato Bhagavata Mamo Yena Chata Sriyaha Niruddha Etat Achakshva Vikramam Charinga Dhanvanaha. The King Parikshit said,
Yatha.
How? Hataha. Killed. Bhagavata. By the Supreme Lord. Bhaumaha. Narakasura, the son of Bhumi, goddess of the earth. Yena. By whom? Cha. And. Taha. These. Sriyaha. Women. Niruddha. Captured. Etat. This. Achakshva. Please tell. Vikramam. Adventure. Sharinga Dhanvanaha. Of Lord Krishna, the possessor of the bow Sharinga.
Of Lord Krishna, the possessor of the bow Sharinga.
Translation of the servants of His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. King Parikshit said, "How was Bhaumasura, who kidnapped so many women, killed by the Supreme Lord? Please narrate this adventure of Lord Sharinga Dhanavas." And there's no purport to this, so I'll just read the next one. Shukdev Goswami said, "After Bhauma had stolen the earrings belonging to Indra's mother, along with Varuna's umbrella, and the demigod's playground at the peak of Mandara mountain, Indra went to Lord Krishna and informed him of these misdeeds. The Lord, taking his wife Satyabhama with him, then rode on Garuda to Pragjyotishpur, which was surrounded on all sides by fortifications consisting of hills, unmanned weapons, water, fire and wind, and by obstructions of Mura Pashavaya." Purport. The Acharyas have explained in various plausible ways why Lord Krishna took his wife Satyabhama with him. Srila Sridhar Swami begins by saying that the Lord wanted to give his adventurous wife a novel experience and thus took her to the scene of this extraordinary battle. Also, Lord Krishna had once granted the blessings to Bhumi, the earth goddess, that he would not kill her demoniac son without her permission. Since Bhumi is an expansion of Satyabhama, the latter could authorize Krishna to do the needful with the unusually nasty Bhaumasura. Finally, Satyabhama had been miffed when Narad Muni brought a celestial Parijata flower to Queen Rukmini. To pacify Satyabhama, Lord Krishna had promised her, "I'll give you a whole tree of these flowers," and thus the Lord scheduled this procurement of a heavenly tree within his itinerary. Even nowadays, devoted husbands take their wives shopping, and thus Lord Krishna took Satyabhama to the heavenly planets to get a heavenly tree, as well as to retrieve the goods Bhaumasura had stolen and returned them to their rightful owners. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti notes that in the heat of the battle, Queen Satyabhama would naturally become anxious for Lord Krishna's safety and pray for the battle to end. Thus, she would readily give permission to Krishna to kill the son of her expansion. Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharini Nirvisheshakshinivadi Pashira Deshidharini. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gauravaktamina Narayanam Namaskritam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudhihai Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. So, there's a lot of action in this chapter, a lot of fighting. And Krishna kills Narakasura, the demon. And actually we see from the first and second verses of this chapter that here King Parikshit is asking a question to Shukdev Goswami. And actually the whole world is just about questions and answers. At every point of time, somebody is asking a question and somebody is replying. That's what is happening all the time. So, even in the Bhagavatam we see Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukdev Goswami a lot of questions. And basically the Bhagavatam deals with questions relating to Krishna. Outside this temple, even a lot of people asking questions, but they deal with so many mundane subject matters and they don't give any satisfaction to the heart. Whereas if you read the questions and answers of Parikshit Maharaj and Shukdev Goswami, it gives tremendous bliss to the heart, because a self which is burning, that can be pacified. And all the time, basically, four things are taking place. People are glorifying somebody, they're hearing about somebody, they're remembering somebody and worshipping someone. So we see this all the time, just like the newspapers are always glorifying somebody or the other. Anybody can be made famous very quickly by constant glorification. But here we see that Shukdev Goswami, Sutta Goswami, they are glorifying Krishna. because in all statuses of life, all orders and divisions, this glorification, hearing, remembering and worshipping is always going on. People are hearing sound vibrations, like radio vibrations. There's so many vibrations in the air. If we have a device, we can catch them. So in this temple here, we glorify Krishna. Krishna is being glorified. We hear transcendental topics about Krishna. Then people are always remembering someone all the time. Like somebody is remembering their lover or their boss, or always they're remembering something. And everybody is worshipping someone. They have their role models, they have the actors, actresses. But the Bhagavatam tells us we can divert these four processes towards Krishna. If we divert these four processes towards Krishna, then that will be the perfection of our life. If we glorify the topics about Krishna and hear about them constantly in the association of devotees, and we try to remember them, and also worship Krishna. That's why we have this temple community where as devotees we can get together and perform congregational chanting or worship Krishna. There's so many opportunities in a community like this to worship Krishna. So this is what is going on over here, these questions and answers. So now here we see that basically Bhaumasura, he's a demon. And demons usually they keep quarreling with demigods. We have seen this in Bhagavatam so many times, in numerous occasions. There are accounts of where demons are quarreling with demigods. Just like in the 8th canto it is described how the demons headed by Bali Maharaj, they attacked the demigods headed by Indra. Because Indra was cursed by Durvasa Muni. And Durvasa Muni cursed him that because Durvasa Muni placed a garland on Indra, and Indra out of pride put it on his elephant Airavat, and the elephant he crushed it on the ground. So Durvasa Muni got upset and he cursed Indra that he would lose all opulence and fame. So when the demons attacked the demigods, Indra lost the battle. So like this, we see so many times this constant war between the demons and demigods. So we'll see basically who is a demon. A demon is someone who denies the existence of the Lord, or who says this world doesn't have any foundation, there is no God in control. And the demons are very envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And their envy is caused by false prestige, wealth, and accumulation of strength. So that's what constitutes a demon. And demons, they might make a show of religious, so-called religious following, just to attract number of followers. Whereas devotees, they abide by the scriptural injunctions. They acknowledge the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas the demons, they don't acknowledge that. They might make a show of all these things, but in actuality, they don't acknowledge. And they are always attracted by temporary things, the demons. Because they try to find happiness in matter, basically. Whereas the devotees, they try to find the happiness in the permanent, in the self, and the self in relation with Krishna. And the demons, they are always bound by so many desires. And even Krishna says in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that the demons, they're bound to a network of desires, and they're unable to fulfill such desires, and they always want to possess more and more things. They say, so much is mine today, that will also be mine, he is my enemy, so I will kill him and I will get that. In this way I will be the conqueror of the whole world. They say like that. So we see like this also, Bhaumasura, he kidnapped many women. He kidnapped 16,100 queens of various kings. and he brought them to his palace. And even not only that, then he went to the demigod's abode, and from there he stole Indra's mother's earrings, and he stole Varuna's umbrella, and also he captured the playground in which the demigods used to sport on Mandara mountain. So we can see from these demons, they always want to possess more and more. There's no end to their greed. So Bhaumasura, he captured all these things and he kept them in his possession. And Indra was quite upset about this. So he went to complain to Lord Krishna in Dwarka, and he informed him of these misdeeds. So then Krishna immediately with Satyabhama, he went to the capital of Bhaumasura, which is Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes. It is located in Tejpur, which is in East India, in Assam. There's a state called Assam. That's where this place is. And it's a very hilly area. And also, the Bhagavatam describes that his kingdom was, his fortification was consisting of hills, unmanned weapons. So it's basically it's somewhere in the Himalayas. So Krishna with Satyabhama, they went on the Garuda, his carrier Garuda. And he went to Bahama's abode. Now Bahamasura's abode was very well protected. And Bahamasura himself, he was the son of the earth goddess Bhumi. And Satyabhama, and Bhumi is an expansion of Satyabhama. So Krishna had a purpose here in taking Satyabhama with him. Even Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur mentions in the purport that Krishna wanted to take Satyabhama with him so that when there will be this furious battle between Krishna and Bhaumasura, at the peak of the battle, Satyabhama might be concerned about Krishna, and she will say that you can now kill Bhaumasura, because Krishna promised to Bhumi that he will not kill his son. Her son, unless she orders him to. But because Satyabhama, Bhumi is an expansion of Satyabhama, if Satyabhama authorizes, so he can slay Bhaumasura. So that's why Krishna took Satyabhama. And also, Krishna wanted to take Satyabhama on an adventure tour, and where she can witness this war. And also, when Krishna performs one action, he fulfills so many purposes we cannot even conceive of. And one of the other purposes was Krishna wanted to take the Parijata tree. He wanted Satyabhama to take the Parijata tree from Indra's abode and install it in her palace in Dwarka. So here we see that Bhaumasura's abode was quite well guarded, even as compared to today's standards. We see that on all sides there were hills of his fortification, and there were unmanned weapons. Like even today they have unmanned weapons, but they're not really unmanned. Somebody is behind them. Like they have the air defense artillery, supposed to be unmanned, but there is a person there manning it somewhere hidden. But here we see that that Bhaumasura's abode was very well protected. And there was also a demon by the name of Mura who was lying in the water. Basically there was his abode, and around it was a canal of water. And outside the canals there were hills, and there was four strongholds, and there was military on all the four sides, very powerful. And beyond the canal there was electric wiring. And beyond the electric wiring, there was some gaseous substance. And beyond that, there was this Mura Pasha wire, which this Mura demon, he created. It was something like a barbed wire. And beyond that was Bhaumasura's palace, and in which he was situated. So, Nobody could penetrate this palace. Even the demigods could not. Otherwise, Indra could have gone and retrieved it. That's why Indra approached Lord Krishna, so that he can retrieve these his possessions. Now, it is described that, that because Mura was so powerful, we can compare Mura to the, for example, to the material nature. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivi esha guna mai mama maya durateya mameva ye prapatyante mayam durantiyatanti. He says that this divine energy of mine is very difficult to cross over. Only by my mercies somebody can cross over it. So because if we take the demon Mura, for example, as the material nature, it is very difficult to surpass it. But if we take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, it is possible to cross over it. And only Krishna can pick up a conditioned soul and take him back. Just like there's somebody is drowning in the water. If somebody is swimming in the sea, how long can he swim? It's not possible to cross over the ocean. No matter how expert the swimmer is, he will drown. But if Krishna comes and picks up that person, he can be saved. And also Krishna says in the 10th canto, in Lord Brahma's prayers unto Krishna, Lord Brahma says, for those who have accepted the boat of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation and is famous as Murari, the enemy of the Mura demon, the ocean of the material world is like the water contained in a calf's hoofprint, and the goal is Param Padam, Vaikuntha, the place where there are no material miseries, and the place where there is danger at, not the place where there is danger at every step. So we see one who takes shelter of Murari. That's why Krishna's name is Murari, because he killed the demon Mura, who had five heads and who made this tremendous military arrangement. So, but if one accepts the shelter of the board of the board of the lotus feet of the Lord, one can cross over the material nature, the material energy. Because the conditioned soul is always trying to make plans. Because at every moment, the plans of the conditioned soul are being baffled by the laws of material nature. So the conditioned soul, by performing fruitive actions, is always making plans to defy the laws of nature. But he's always being defeated by the threefold miseries, by birth, death, old age and disease. So in this way we see, if one takes shelter of Murari, then one can cross over the material ocean very easily. And here we see how Krishna penetrated this this fortification. First of all, Krishna, he broke the stronghold with his club. He went and hit. Sorry. So first of all, Krishna, he broke the stronghold with his club. He just smashed his club. It's not meant to break the microphone, but otherwise the temple authorities won't be very happy with me. And so he broke the strongholds with his club. And after that, we see that he killed all the military, because on the four sides there were all the military formation. He killed them with his arrows. He was just firing arrows all the time, very quickly, and he killed all of them without any effort. And after that, with his Sudarshan Chakra, he destroyed that canal of water, and he destroyed that electric fencing, and also he destroyed that gaseous substance. And when he blew his conch shell, he blew it so loudly that it shattered the hearts of all the soldiers. And not only that, it woke up the Mura demon who was lying within the water. And then the Mura demon with five heads came out of the water very angry. His eyes were burning red. And he picked up his trident and he hurled it at the Lord. And Krishna, he smashed it to pieces. And later, he, with the Sudarshan Chakra, he decapitated the demon Mura. His five heads, just his, with his Sudarshan Chakra. In this way, we see how Krishna, he killed the demon Mura. And the demon Mura, he had seven sons. And he, when those seven sons, they saw that Krishna had killed their father, they were enraged. And also Mura had instructed them to attack Krishna. So then they charged Krishna, and they were also very easily destroyed by Krishna. And then at this point of time, when Bhaumasura, Narkasura, he saw that his entire army had been slain, so he himself came out. And he came on an elephant. And then first of all he tried to attack Garuda. But he could not destroy Garuda. And Garuda was all the time, because Satyabhama and Krishna were on top of Garuda, and Garuda was flying everywhere, and he was knocking out the elephants, horses, chariots, you know, hitting them like that. And Krishna was firing various arrows. In this way he just devastated his army. And then towards the end, he threw a club at Krishna. But Krishna again smashed it with his club and broke his club to thousands of pieces. And then again, then Narkasura was again going to charge him, but Krishna, with his Sudarshan Chakra, he just cut off his head. And then Narkasura, I think he fell in the water. Or I think Mura fell into the water. So then Narkasura fell down and he was dead. And all the demons were crying. Oh no, our master is dead. Whereas the demigods, they were showering garlands, or they were showering flower petals on top of Krishna. They were saying, Jai, Jai. So in this way, Krishna killed Narkasura. And then Krishna went to the palace of Narkasura, where he found 100 queens. And when they saw Krishna, they were all captivated by his beauty. And they all wanted to accept him as their husband. And they were all praying to Providence to arrange that. And Krishna, being the Paramatma within the heart of everyone, he could understand that they had unalloyed devotion for him. And he accepted their prayer. In this way, Krishna freed the 16,100 queens, and he gave them very nice clothes, and he sent each of them on a palanquin to Dwarka. And then Krishna and Satyabhama, they went to Amaravati. This is the capital of the capital of heaven, where Lord Indra resides. So when Indra and mother's name is, what's Indra's mother's name?
Sati.
When Indra and Sati,
Sachi Devi. Yeah, that's the wife.
So they greeted Krishna, and they offered prayers to him, offered him a nice reception. And then Krishna returned these items: the umbrella, the earrings, Aditi's earrings, and also the playground. And at that time, Indra was very happy. But here, it's quite interesting to see that later when Queen Satyabhama took the Parijata tree, Indra became very angry. And he wanted to fight Krishna. He fought with Krishna, actually. Because we see before how Indra, he came to Krishna in Dwarka, and he offered praise to him, he bowed down to him, and he requested him to get these possessions back. And later when Krishna got them back, but his wife was taking the Parijata tree, he got very angry with him, and he fought a war, and Krishna defeated Indra. So from this we can see the materialistic dealings. Obviously Lord Indra, he approached Krishna with a motive. He recognized Krishna, but even Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, four types of people they approach me: those who are in distress, those who are in want of money, those who are inquisitive, and those who are in search of the absolute truth. So here, Indra approached with the motive. But when his motive was fulfilled, and Krishna was taking some possession from him, he got very angry. Sometimes we see also people, they go to temples, they ask for benedictions, you know, they give some money or whatever, they ask for benedictions. But when Krishna takes whatever is in their wallet, they get very upset. So from this we can see, like, this is like a materialistic dealing. And also, we see then Krishna, he went back to Dwarka, and Queen Satyabhama, she planted that tree in her courtyard. And all the drones from the heavenly planets, because the tree was so beautiful and emanated so much aroma, all the drones from the heavenly planets, they came here. It beautified the garden of Krishna in Dwarka. And actually, Satyabhama, because what happened before was Narad Muni, he brought some flowers for Rukmini Devi, and Satyabhama, she got a bit envious, but she had an inferiority complex. So she said, Krishna, I also want that. And Krishna said, don't worry, I'll get you the full tree. Not only a flower, but you'll get the full tree. So like that, Krishna got Satyabhama the tree. And then we see Krishna, then he marries all the princesses. The princess that he freed from the palace of Bhaumasura. And if somebody, usually we see in the material world, if somebody has to marry someone, he can't marry so many persons at one time. He can only marry one at a time. But Krishna, he expanded himself into 16,100 forms in order to show the world that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, Krishna's pastimes cannot be imitated. So Krishna created 16,100 palaces, and in each palace in a different temple, he married them simultaneously, 16,100 queens. And then we see in the later parts of this chapter that how the queens, all the 16,100 queens, that they all served Krishna very nicely. It is described, though they had so many maid servants, still they preferred to serve Krishna very eagerly, as Mataji was describing it yesterday very nicely, that we have to develop this eagerness in order to please Krishna. And these 16,100 queens, they basically they set a very nice standard by personally serving Krishna. They would fan Krishna. Even Narad Muni, when he went to all the different palaces of Krishna, he was surprised to see that Krishna was performing different activities. In like some palaces, the queens were, one of the queen would be fanning Krishna. They would ask Krishna to smell the fragrant oil. They would bathe him. They would comb his hair. They would cook him very nice food. And they would dress him. In this way, they performed devotional service. They were very eager to perform. So we can also take inspiration from these queens, and we can also try to be very eager to perform a devotional service. It's not that the queen said, okay, now I've got so many maid servants, they can do all these services. But they were very eager to do it. So if we try to follow in the footsteps of the queens, and then we can attain perfection. So I'll just stop here and we'll see if there are any questions or comments on this subject matter. Yes, Mother.
In the spiritual world, there are no demons, only willing demons. So when the Lord appears in the material world, he shows his supremacy by dealing with the demons. The object and is the most merciful incarnation. He follows only 500 years ago. So he only brings a holy man with his mercy. I find it very difficult to link up, although we haven't mentioned it, you know, capital punishment in Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord appears 5,000 years ago. And Lord Chaitanya appearing 500 years ago, being most merciful, he doesn't deal with issues like that. So I'm wondering why devotees do believe in capital punishment. Is it because God kills demons, or I know what the Bhagavad Gita says, you know, the karma is taken away, etc. But I was just wondering from what perspective.
Do devotees?
Yes, believe in it.
In capital punishment?
Yes, because Lord Chaitanya is the last incarnation, he's most merciful.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya, in this age of Kali, it is not possible to kill everyone because everybody is a demon, everybody is against Krishna. So, Lord Chaitanya is freely giving his mercy through his holy names, and he's killing the disease within the heart, or he's transforming us. But in this age, I don't think it's very practical to avoid capital punishment to someone in this day and age. It is better to try to get to reform them through the process of devotional service, to encourage them in that way, to engage them in acts of devotion. That's what I feel.
Yeah, well, that's capital teacher now, because you know, capital punishment is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, so it's good to hear you say that. That's all that's happening.
But yes, some countries like America, they do avoid capital punishment.
Yes.
In the old times, if somebody would commit a very sinful activity, like murder someone or slaughter a cow, the king would award capital punishment to them, which is the right thing, because it takes away their karma. Would anybody else like to comment on this?
It has to be that it's part of human society. So what it means is that the king will try to convert the person into a devotee, but some people they refuse to surrender to Krishna. So if they're demoniac and they will not surrender to Krishna, then at that point in time, if they're a murderer or something like that, then that's the law of God. Then they have to, if they've taken someone else's life, then their life has to be taken. If they take someone else's life and then they change and then they become a devotee, then you don't take their life because they reform. But if they take someone's life and they don't reform, then capital punishment, that's God's law, has to be enforced. There's one conversation, and Prabhupada said that, they said, how will we convert everyone to become devotees? And then Prabhupada said, please, can you preach? And then they said, well, even after we preach, some people won't be devotees. So then Prabhupada said, then you take a gun and you hold it to their head and you say, chant Hare Krishna. So everyone has a choice. And those who won't obey God's law, then that's part of God's system.
Yeah, we could do that if Varnashram Dharma takes over the world. Then we could do that. I think till then we'll have to try to transform them. Make them devotees. Yeah. Yes, Prabhupada. Yes, Prabhupada.
Can you tell us about Narakasura, how he was such a big demon? He could imprison 6,900 women, and also he had a chance to get liberated by Krishna.
How was he such a big demon?
Yes. Yeah. What was his background previous?
I'm not really sure what his background was. Tried to look it up, I couldn't find much. Was he born of Varahadev?
Yes.
Because I think when he carried the earth with his tusks, and through that, when the tusks they pierced the earth, like that Bhumi got pregnant and something like that. I'm not sure. Yes.
I feel like that those who are murdering others, they don't have right to do that. And the others, if they are not murdered, we are actually sanctioning taking the lives of some innocent person. So it's the way, the punishment and also protecting the innocent.
So you're saying capital punishment is alright, it's justified?
Because they have to be protected. For someone's innocent life should be taken on the harmful. Has such harmful mentality.
Yeah, that's right. Yes,
I think in America at the moment, like a large percentage of the population, a large percentage of the prison population that has been awarded capital punishment, a lot of those people are innocent. So, I mean, that's one thing to say, that person deserves to be put to death, but a lot of those people that are put to death are innocent.
Yeah, we're not talking about those who are innocent. We're talking about,
I mean, that's what it practically comes to, it's like.
Mainly we have to go by the scriptures, like the Manu Samhita. You know, if we establish Varnashram Dharma, then we have to follow such scriptures like Manu Samhita. They outline the how human society should function and how to avoid punishment and such kind of things. But capital punishment is necessary in a Varnashram society, if established.
It's even necessary in this society.
Hmm.
It's necessary. If someone kills someone, then they should be killed. That is the law of God.
Hmm.
It's necessary. It's the defect of the leaders these days that they don't enforce that part of law. It's not proper to. It's against God's law to not kill someone who wants to kill someone. Just like that man shot the innocent person.
Hmm.
So he should be killed. That's the end. That's the law of God. That's appropriate. And if that's not done, then there's reactions for the leaders and the government.
Yes, Mother.
I suppose the problem is when you do get corrupt governments, and then, like Guru said, that innocent people get caught up in the whole system as well. So that's where it becomes in Kali Yuga, that's where it doesn't become so cut and dry. Whereas, you know, like in Lord Chaitanya's time, because governments are corrupt, it's not so cut and dry. Yeah, like someone that blatantly obviously killed someone, yeah.
Then, you
know,
because governments corrupt, innocent people get caught in the system as well. Hmm. So then we have to be like Lord Chaitanya came at a merciful time when governments were corrupt.
Yeah.
That's why in this age, Lord Chaitanya stresses the congregational chanting of the holy names so that he can widely distribute his mercy to the devotees, and so that gradually the heart will be transformed through like things like prasadam distribution, organizing massive kirtans. Prabhupada wanted that devotees do Lord of Harinam, do massive prasadam distribution, big programs to basically transform the heart of the society. But also, as you mentioned, the leaders have to follow the law of God. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Granth Sanchana Bhagavatam.